You're listening to Don't IEP Alone with Special Education Advocate Lisa Leitner. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. Now back to the show with your host, Lisa.
Hi, and welcome. I'm Lisa Leitner, and I'm here with you today for another episode of Don't IEP Alone podcast. Little bit different setup. I am on video. You'll be seeing some YouTube shorts and reels and things like that. So if you really want to watch me talk, I'm not entirely comfortable with it, let me tell you. But the really kind of big and popular podcasters are saying, this is what you got to do. So that's what I'm doing. Yeah. So here I am in my little recording studio in my basement and recording an episode, which will also be visible on YouTube if you wish to watch it there. So today we're going to begin to talk about, I'm going to do another kind of, I don't know, maybe two or three part series. Depends on how long I ramble. Hopefully not that long and I can stick to the point. But I wanted to talk about behavior because behavior is, of course, the most visible kind of negative characteristic that our kids may exhibit. It's one that I think has the most long-lasting impacts on our kids. You know, they can be socially ostracized, which can last, you know, forever. It's the one that puts them into the discipline system and the school-to-prison pipeline and so many other things that can happen. That's why I wanted to talk about behavior. Also because, you know, behind the scenes, I can see what people are looking for on my site. And behavior is a very popular topic. I can see what you all are sharing on Facebook. And my behavior stuff is, you know, again, it's some of the most popular stuff on there. So I want to start with, you know, when I first started doing this, we were begging schools, and this goes back to about 2010 or so, we were begging schools to do FBAs, right? Kids were having behaviors, they were being sent home from school, they were being suspended officially or unofficially. And so they were being sent home and we were begging schools to please do an FBA. And it was, oh no, you know, whatever. We were getting all these reasons about why an FBA wasn't being done. Now I feel like it's much easier to get an FBA and I feel like lots of schools are completely on board with doing FBAs and behavior plans, but we're seeing a whole new set of issues surrounding behavior plans. So that's what I want to dig into today is the flaws and the trends that I'm seeing with problematic FBAs, I guess, for lack of a better word. And this isn't, you know, I get a lot of pushback and it gives me a headache from school staff. I'm not picking on any particular school staff. And if I point out something that is problematic, I get a lot of, well, my school doesn't do that. Well, my school doesn't do that. And, you know, because people love their job, they love their career. And they're passionate about helping kids and they take it personally, right? And I'm not critiquing any one specific person or school. If your school isn't doing this, then great, you know, like be happy. I know that not every school across the nation is doing this every single day. It's just a trend where it's happening to too many kids across the nation and we have to fix it, right? So one of the things, and this is the first point I'm going to bring up is the one where I get the most pushback. And that is anyone can do an FBA. So first of all, let me start off with saying, if you don't know what an FBA is, it's a functional behavior assessment. And it's part of the IEP process where your school team is to evaluate your child and look at their behavior and try to figure out essentially what's going on. So when a child is repeatedly having negative behaviors, the common thinking, and this is across not just schools, but households as well, is that, you know, we punish. We reward and punish a child. And we're just learning that maybe that's not the best way or the most effective way to go about it, in particular with disabled kids who often cannot process rewards and consequences. So you ask for an FBA because behaviors are happening. And IDEA and state regs, to my knowledge, do not define who can do an FBA. So essentially anyone can do it. And yes, I have seen them done by gen ed teachers. I've seen them done by special ed teachers, guidance counselors, any school staff can do them. That's problematic because not all school staff gets a significant amount or a meaningful amount of training in behavior. And this is where I get a lot of pushback. And they go, well, in my school, a BCBA always does it. And a BCBA is board certified behavior analyst. Or they'll say, well, you know, in my school, you know, we have training in behavior. Like, that's great. I'm genuinely happy for you. If your school district can employ BCBAs and has them on staff, and that's who's doing these, and, you know, they're giving behavior training to other personnel, that's genuinely fantastic. I'm not knocking any one person. However, it's not uncommon for a child to receive an FBA from an OT, a speech therapist, a teacher, a gen ed or special ed, a guidance counselor. I've seen other school personnel do them with very little training in behavior. And just like you don't want your guidance counselor to be doing OT evaluations or PT evaluations, they shouldn't be doing the behavior assessments either. You want it to be someone who is trained in behavior. That's one problem. The next problem that I often see is that they don't go deep enough. I honestly have seen multiple FBAs and behavior plans that said things like, the child won't go to school because the child has school refusal. Well, no shit. Like, okay, that's not telling me anything. Things like, the child is, you know, won't do what's asked of them, you know, is refusing to do something because it's a non-preferred activity. Like, again, it has to go deeper than that. And I don't see a lot of FBAs really digging deep and saying, you know, what is really going on here? So, for example, using the school refusal example that I gave, you know, and I've also seen things like, he won't go to school, he has school refusal because he has anxiety. Okay, great. What do you do with that, right? You have to dig in and say, what is happening at school that is so anxiety-inducing or so negative for the child that they absolutely cannot bring themselves to attend? That's where you need to go with this. What is going on? So is it a lack of skills? Is it bullying? Is it sensory? And so on and so on. You have to get in and figure it out, like at a very deep level. And you know, this goes for anything. Like, we have to figure out why, you know, for school refusal, like why, what is so, I don't even know what to say besides negative. Like, why can't the child bring themselves to go to school? So it's a basic FBA will do what they call ABC. What is the antecedent? What is the behavior? And then what are the consequences? And that's just sometimes a little too basic. You have to go deeper than that. You know, and the same goes for eloping, right? Eloping is kind of sorta on it. It's just kind of like a different flavor of school refusal, right? The child is eloping and escaping a situation. And it has to go deeper than the child eloped from the classroom because they didn't want to be there. And that is, I mean, I'm not kidding when I tell you that we see that on FBA sometimes. So you have to ask yourself, what is so negative? What is happening in that child's brain that they absolutely cannot make themselves sit there any longer, right? Because we do this as adults, right? We elope from situations, but we know how, we have better and more appropriate skills to do it. But sometimes you've been bored. Sometimes something's been too hot, too noisy, too whatever, and you make yourself kind of endure it to a certain degree until you excuse yourself and leave. That's what kids are doing, right? They're taking that sensory break. They're leaving a situation. They're saying, it's too hot in here. It's too noisy. This is too boring. I don't like this, whatever. And they're leaving the situation. So we need to figure out why they cannot bring themselves to sit there in that classroom any longer or remain in that classroom. Why are they eloping? That would be another one. The other thing I want to bring up is that if you're going to request an FBA for a child, please hit the pause button on that. And the first thing that I want you to do is get out your child's IEP and make sure that it is, first of all, appropriate and thorough and robust and has everything in it that a child needs. And the second piece of that would be, is it being implemented? And if the IEP is not being implemented with fidelity consistently, that's your antecedent right there. And that is what I would work on before I would move to an FBA. And then you start in all this garbage with rewards and behavior and stuff like that, that usually doesn't even work. But you want to make sure that the IEP is robust and that it's being implemented before you even move to an FBA. Because like I said, that is your answer. That is why the child is probably exhibiting these behaviors. There's a behavior concept or teaching in behavior called the four functions of behavior, first developed by Skinner. And yes, this is why it often feels like we're training dogs at times when we're talking about this with our kids. And this is one of the reasons why I'm opposed to it. But Skinner said that there are four functions of behavior. There are four main functions of behavior. I don't know that he used the word only, so I don't want to say that if he didn't say that there are only four functions of behavior. But his four functions of behavior were attention, escape or avoidance, access to a tangible item or activity, and sensory stimulation. And that any person who is exhibiting behavior, they were the reward, if you will, of the behavior was one of those four things. I cannot possibly disagree more with the attention-seeking behavior that I see on so many IEPs, because I have seen kids and I have seen older kids, right? I'm talking about kids in middle school and beyond, have kind of little breakdowns, meltdowns, whatever you want to call them. I have seen them kind of lose it, so to speak, in front of their peers, or I've heard about it afterwards. I don't know of any teenage boy who wants to have a breakdown or a meltdown in front of their peers and cry in front of their peers in middle school. And then I've seen behavior like that labeled attention seeking. Kids don't know that, don't want that. They know the consequences, whether they can fully grasp the repercussions, and obviously they cannot process it out or it would be happening differently. Kids understand how they're going to be excluded and socially ostracized for some of their behaviors, and yet they cannot stop themselves from doing it. So please stop telling us that this is attention-seeking behavior. Society, as a general rule, our society makes it easier for a child to be the bad kid instead of the dumb kid. Now, I'm not talking about crying and meltdowns anymore. I'm talking about other negative behaviors. And I'm not saying that any of our kids are dumb, but many of them will tell you that they feel dumb. They're sitting there in class, everyone around them appears to be grasping the knowledge, grasping the content, being able to learn. And if they can't read, they can't focus, they can't process, they feel like they are the only person in that room who cannot learn, and they feel dumb. So again, I'm not saying our kids are dumb. I'm saying they feel dumb. And they will often tell you this, right? I've heard heartbreaking stories from parents who said their kids told them this. I feel so stupid, Mom. I feel so dumb. Why am I so dumb? But our society makes it okay. And it's really preferable to be the bad kid instead of the dumb kid, right? There's the bad boy. You know, if you think back to like Grease, right? The movie, right? Like all those guys were bad. Like they were bad boys. Chances are probably some of them had learning disabilities, right? But it's just much more acceptable. It's kind of like some kids' way of coping with feeling dumb is that they act out. But if you get labeled as attention seeking, it's not attention seeking in that they want to be seen like that. It's that they're trying to divert attention from the real issue, which is that they're really struggling to learn, because their needs are not being supported. So we could go back to, is the IEP robust and being implemented? I'm a follower of Ross Green. And if you follow his work, watch his videos, he tells you behind every challenging behavior is an unsolved problem and a lagging skill. And if we would teach the skills and support the kids, much of these behaviors would go away. FBAs, I find they rarely address trauma. They rarely address sensory needs. Behavior plans often force a child through negative interoception experiences. And interoception, you know, we used to think that we only had five senses. Now we know that we have more than that, eight. And interoception is not just, you know, what you're hearing and seeing, which we have to accept. And we have to acknowledge that many kids are having different sensory experiences than what we're experiencing. And we can't continue to gaslight these kids through, oh, no, the light's not too bright. No, this isn't too loud. If a child tells you it's too loud, it's too loud. If a child tells you it's too bright, it's too bright. I don't know why we don't believe children. But we have to acknowledge that trauma and sensory experiences and all these things play into behavior, and that kids are coming to the table, or they're coming to the classroom with a different set of experiences, and they're having a different real-time experience than what we're having. So I'm going to stop there with the FBAs. I'm going to get into behavior plans maybe next time, but those are some of the things I want you to be aware of when you're asking for an FBA. First, please make sure that your IEP is robust and being followed first before you even get into behaviors and asking for an FBA. Second, you want to ask who is doing the FBA, and that person needs to have behavior training. Make sure that your FBA goes deep enough into the issues. And, you know, we want to think about this whole concept of can't versus won't. And is the child doing something or not doing something because they won't or because they can't? And behavior tends to only focus on the won't. They won't do this. And that's not usually the case. It's often because they can't perform the skill or the task or meet the demands of what is being asked of them. So I will end that for today. Don't forget to check out the IEP toolkit and all the other great stuff on adayinourshoes.com and adayinourshoes.org.
Thank you for listening to Don't IEP Alone with Special Education Advocate Lisa Leitner. We're so glad you've joined us and would love to connect with you outside of the show. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. From self-care tips to common IEP mistakes, there's even more to explore. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast and subscribe to never miss an episode. Until next time, don't IEP alone, and you don't have to.